Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, Autosport's international editor, and joining me as ever is Motorsport.com's global MotoGP editor, Oriol Bousdemont, all the way from Australia. Yuri, how are you getting on over there?
Hello, I'm good here. Still waiting to come back to Europe and, yeah, waiting for the season to start finally. I think that's last weekend. Last week we had some good news about the calendar and, yeah, we are very excited about this.
Yeah, and indeed, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, this week was shaping up to be quite a sad one in the bike racing world because this week was supposed to be TT race week. You know, we're recording on a Friday. It was supposed to be the big one, the senior TT day. But we've had a distraction because we've had a brand new MotoGP calendar, 13 races, a nice array of tracks. I've got the list in front of me. We've got two races at Jerez. We've got a race in Brno, two races in Austria, two races in San Marino, race in Barcelona, a race at France, two races in Aragon, and two races in Valencia. So that is quite a nice calendar, quite a sensible calendar as well.
Yeah, I think that we are to be more than happy with this calendar because to me, and it's just my feeling, it is a bit more realistic. It is a realistic calendar, you know what I mean? Let's see what happens in the future, but we have another series, I don't want to even point anyone, that they are like, yeah, projecting a really, let's say, ambitious calendar, and we all know what happened just a few months ago with the ambitious, aims, or you know what I mean? I think that, yeah, it's a pretty realistic, grounded calendar considering the circumstances. And the good things is that Dorna and FIM still leave the door open for going flyaway if the conditions get better. So
this is what I really like about this calendar, because they've not even penciled in the flyaway races. They've said, look, we can have them after the final race in Valencia in November, but you know, before that, nothing. We're not going to try and aim for them. I think they're going to make a decision before the end of July or just after the first couple of races, so roundabout there, which again, sensible. So yeah, like you say, it's all been done very grounded. And
the worst thing probably with this calendar is that I spoke with Wilco Zillenberg 2 days ago for another story, and I asked him about the calendar. It was the same day that Calendari went public, official, and then he told me, listen, I'm very happy that this calendar, but you know, for the riders will be a bit difficult or annoying, because I mean, after Sunday's race, the first thing that riders want to do is to leave the track and don't come back until a year after. And then in 4-5 days time, they will have to jump on the bike again on the same track, so for them will be a bit annoying. But given the circumstances that we currently have, I think it's okay. They are riders. They have to adapt to these, exceptional conditions that we have this year.
The calendars, the circuits that we have double headers at, they're all good circuits, you know, Jerez, Misano, Valencia. Aragon's take it or leave it. I like the circuit, but generally it's not the most interesting races. But other than that, it's a good mix of circuits, and it shouldn't. I don't think we'll see a situation where one rider will dominate one race at a circuit and then they'll dominate the next weekend. I don't think those circuits really allow for it. If we look at what happened in Misano last year, if we look at Jerez last year as well, you know, I think and Austria as well. We've got, I mean, if we get two races in Austria like we did last year, you know, Perfect. I can't wait for that. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it will be good to see how the teams can improve the bike from 1 week to the other, from the first week to the second one. Will be good, but at the same time, will be good to understand which riders are able to improve the most, their riding style, how they will learn from their mistakes, and I'm can't wait to see this new. In a way, I think it's interesting to see because we can see more things or different things than in a normal calendar, which is good.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the interesting things is that we go to the second race at a track. Of course, we go there and there'll be a lot more rubber down, so the track will be different. The lap times will be better. If we look at when we have tests on a Monday after a race, look at the lap times you get there because there's so much rubber down. They're always very, very close. So that points to the follow-up. Oh, nearly knocked over my microphone. That points to the following race being even closer. And if we base things on testing, we don't have any development.
I think it will depend. It will depend everything on the track. Because, for example, in Jerez, for the second race, most of the rubber will be melted, probably.
That is a very good point, yeah.
due to the weather conditions, because in July, believe me, it will be really, 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 let's say, fried conditions there, frying conditions. So, I remember I spoke with Fabio Quartararo a few days ago. We run that few of the stories, and he told me that the thing that was worrying him the most was the tires, because he said, "Listen, we know that Michelin will bring to Jerez the tires that they believe that are the best, but what if they don't? What if they aren't the best?" So we're going to have to adapt. Okay, we'll be the same for everybody, but it can be a tricky weekend if the tires don't perform as Michelin expect.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing there. Of course, Michelin are up against it because they can't do any testing right now. You know, and they're not going to be able to with such a condensed calendar. They're going to rely on... Basically, all the testing they're going to have will be one day before the Grand Prix on the Wednesday before the first race at Jerez. And then, you know, they're going to just have to play it by ear a little bit based on last year. But yeah, it'll be an interesting scenario.
Yeah, I think it will be more for the riders than for the tire manufacturer, because I don't think Michelin will have any... margin of maneuver from Wednesday to Friday.
Yeah, it'll be very, yeah. It'll be, they'll bring I suspect they'll bring a wide range of tyres, and then they'll be. The interesting thing on that as well is that we're going to go to some circuits at times where Michelin have no data of, like Jerez, as you mentioned there. But Le Mans, we're going to go to Le Mans in October. They don't have any data of what Le Mans, Le Mans can be quite cold, but it's,
can be quite cold and can be quite not happening, because it will all depend on the conditions, and considering that the Le Mans race will only take place if the fans are allowed on the track. So let's see and how it goes, because don't forget that will be quite later on the calendar, hopefully not, but let's see how the spread goes at that point.
Yeah, indeed, there's still a lot of questions, and this is the thing, it's cautious optimism we have. We're all excited, but we're still a few weeks to go. It's still keeping it calm. Hope, you know, touch wood, nothing will happen, but we just have to take it day by day. But we've seen over the past few weeks, you know, particularly in America, NASCAR, IndyCar, Moto America have all come back. There haven't been any problems so far. So it can be done, I think, is what we've seen. So it's just a case of yeah, just we just need everyone to stay sensible, stay 2 meters apart from each other. Don't do anything silly, and we can go racing pretty soon.
Yeah, that's another thing that people from the paddock, or the people that supposed to be allowed into the paddock, are a bit worried about, because I mean the protocols are very strict at this point, and people from the paddock will be monitorized very strictly. They will have to follow very rigid or strict rules. For example, they will have to, and don't forget about the costs of this thing. For example, all of the people will have to won't be able to share rooms.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yes,
which means that point. We increase the prices, of course,
which is a problem for Moto2 and Moto3 teams in particular.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they have to follow the rules, let's say, okay, but who's going to pay for that? Because we are not used to face or to deal with these conditions. So for them would be a huge problem. And then, other than economic wise, I mean, people will be only allowed to go from the track to their rooms. They will have to eat the dinner in their rooms, avoiding the common spaces, which I think it's gonna be tough. And the thing is that how they're gonna control most of the people, I mean, because they were very direct on saying, listen, we are not gonna allow anybody breaking the rules. But okay, but how are you gonna control? I know that each team will have a security guy from this kind of protocol or and Dorna. But yeah, if you have only one people for the whole team, you know, and don't forget that Jerez is not the most quiet place.
There are still things that Dorna haven't quite made public yet on how they're going to do it. I guess because they're still working it out. I know they're working quite closely with Moto America, so I guess in a few weeks' time we'll have more of an idea, but there are still issues that need resolved. But to their credit, you know, I think I'm reminded of something that Alberto Puig told you earlier in the year on how Dorna has handled the situation, and I think you do have credit where credit's due. They've been transparent from day one of this whole thing. You know, they've, for the first few weeks, they were continuing to release calendars, which was good and bad, but at least it was shown that they were in discussion with circuits, they were keeping everyone informed. And then when things got worse, they started putting more plans into place, and now we're here, we're looking at a championship, and a good championship at that. So, you know, credit where credit's due. There's still things to be ironed out, but the job Dorna and MotoGP and everyone has done to get to this point has been nothing short of sensational, and, you know, we have to take our hats off to that, really.
Yeah, I think so. I think that they have been really honest and really, transparent. So I would say that,
My biggest concern, though, is if we're going to have a lot of European races and you're over there in Australia, it's going to be quite late nights for you, I imagine, watching the races.
Yeah, well, I will be more than happy to stay awake.
For sure.
I mean, I'm really used, considering that I'm getting used to these night shifts.
I have to say that last week after the Paul Espargaró news, and you sent me a message saying, oh, we can't do the podcast tonight. I'm speaking to Alberto Puig, and I thought, it's 11:30 in Europe and you've managed to get the boss of Honda on the telephone. You know, it's a hats off to you on that one.
But I think it was good to keep speaking with him at that point of the night in Europe, but it was because he was a bit upset that we broke the story. That's why he was interested on trying to know how we figured out and how we found out the story.
I've got a wonderful image in my head of Alberto Bush just sat in his bed, just looking at his phone, about to go to sleep, and he sees the news breaking and just jumping up and down.
Well, it was not furious. Exactly like this, because I spoke with him before breaking the news.
Okay.
So I gave him a call and then said, listen, we're going to break that story. We're going to run this. And then, well, he was doing some stuff. And then that's what happened. We run the study, because I think that it's honest from our side to say, listen, we have this information. If you want to add something, let us know. And then, yeah, he started to sending me texts. I spoke with him. But yeah, this is what happened there.
Yeah, excellent. But just going back to point of races, doesn't look like me and you will be allowed into any races or any media, which I know has upset some, but honestly, for me, if the policy is all media or no media, then you know, it's the fairest way.
Well,
on
I
that
think
front.
That at this point, I come back from one of the sentences, one of the quotes from Pete Bader, when I spoke to him. It was before the poll news, I spoke with him and he told me, listen, I think now it's time to save the business. Don't think individually and just think on saving the business. And I think that's the right approach. So if we have to stay away from the paddock for 1, 2, 3, 5 races, it's good. We all believe, and Dorna makes us think this way, that we're going to be back in the paddock soon. I don't know if we'll be in the 5th race, 7th, 8th, or 9th, or next year. But to be honest, we all want to come back to the paddock as soon as possible. But considering the circumstances, I think we're not, at least, I'm not going to push too much heart to say, listen, if I can get a... No, okay, if you have decided this, I believe on your common sense. So let us know when we can. I mean, if next year, or you know, if next year we are not allowed, then I will start to think, whoa. But you have to think, and you have to see, to watch the thing laterally, okay? You have to open your mind and say, okay, what Formula One's doing? And I don't think, as far as I know, I don't know if the journalists will be allowed into the paddock.
I think the numbers are going to let 10. But, the problem you have with that is how do you decide what 10? Who's deemed worthy enough to be there? Because it doesn't matter if you've been to 500 races or 5 races. The person who's been to 5 races could be... I'm not starting anything, I'm not naming anyone, but the person who's been to maybe 5 or 6 races could be a better journalist than the person that's been to 600 or 700 races. You know, it's experience is one, you know, it's, you just can't.
Yeah, I mean, the criteria that's
possible
that,
to decide.
It's very, let's say, personal. And it depends on the on which perspective you approach this situation. That's why I don't want to push any pressure, and I don't want to interfere, and I don't want to try to, to try to underline or to try to...
Make any demands.
Yeah, exactly. And say, listen, my judgment at this point is the less important thing. So you are the ones running the championship. You are the ones creating these protocols. You are the ones in charge with the security. So you let us know when we are going to be safe. So I would be more worried if they decide which journalist, because then there's a war. You know what I mean? Would be a...
Yeah, selecting media becomes, you know, you only need to look at the news and look at any White House press briefing. Look how selective the media is there, and look how vilified the media is in the eyes of President Trump, for example, hates, you know, CNN and all that, and loves Fox News because he says nice things. And when you get to that stage, it just for sure. So and you, the point that Pip Byra raised there about the business, if the business, the racing business, is saved, the racing business model survives, we survive as an entity, the media survives, we need the racing to survive. Even if we're not there, having races, having things to talk about, having things to analyze, there will be quotes and riders to talk to. We survive as well, which is important for next year when we can get back into a paddock.
I don't think, to be honest, and I'm not a naive thinker, let's say. I wouldn't describe myself as a naive person when I try to analyze the journalist and the world situation. But I don't see Dorna having any interest on leave us outside.
It doesn't. I don't think it would suit them, really. I mean, they need us to promote the championship, really.
Yeah, I mean, well, with a bit more details, let's say, in terms economic-wise, because we all know that their priority is the TV, because we all understand that the TV pays most of the check. But, well, I think we play a really, 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 really important role in the championship by, as you said, promoting the championship, because the TV is really good and very useful for them when the races are on. But when the races are off, when the season is off, we are there all the time. And even when the championship is on, we are promoting the news all the time, with breaking news, with, you know. So we are giving them content all the time. We are exposing their content all the time. That's why I don't really see any interest on them to leave us outside.
Yeah, for sure. It's the old sort of cliche of the television shows the story, but we tell it. You know, you only see 100%. Half a story with television. And I think you have to think from the team's point of view as well, from the manufacturers, from the sponsors, they need us because they need us to put pictures of their riders and their brands on newspapers and websites, and that's how they sell products. So it's all a big chain of, it's a big circle of, it's just, I don't know, it's a big circle is basically what I'm getting at. It's a big circle of everyone helps everyone, and it's all integral. But yeah, it's just, if I don't get to a paddock this year, as much as I would be disappointed, as long as we get some racing, because I miss racing, as I'm sure everyone else does.
Yeah, I mean, as I tell you, if I don't get to the paddock this year, but nobody does, it's good. I mean, the problem is when they start to select people, because then we all know that we all work individually, and then it will be, some tension.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if ever they get to that point, they'd never select me, because I have a terrible track record when it comes to weather at races I attend. It always rains. I mean, my very first race in a paddock,
Silverstone, right?
Was Silverstone 2018.
Yeah, I was
the whole
there.
Thing got cancelled. The second race I was there for them, Valencia, which was rained really heavily. My very first TT last year was rained pretty much. Yeah, I don't think you'd let me in the paddock. Anyway, we're going to go for a quick break. On the other side, we're going to talk about some Aprilia news, because Aleix Espargaró has a new contract. Welcome back to this week's Tank Slappers podcast. We are racing towards the finish, but I just wanted to touch on Aleix Espargaró and Aprilia. A rider I have a lot of time for, Aleix Espargaró. I've always liked... I've liked how open he is. He's always great to go and get a soundbite off of, and I'm glad he's going to be sticking around the paddock for at least two more years, as he has signed a new Aprilia contract, Yuri.
Yeah, I think that is good news for both sides, because I think Aleix mentality and he's a hard worker, so I think he's the right rider for this stage of the Aprilia project. So he's fast, but he is always working at his maximum. So that's what Aprilia needs at the moment, because we don't know, but we guess, or we can feel that the Aprilia has made an improvement with the bike, but we need to reconfirm that. So I think it's good to have Aleix at his maximum at this stage, and then to push a bit more the bike.
Yeah, I think having Aleix there, I've always thought that Aleix has been good for Aprilia and that he's honest about the bike. He doesn't hold back. With some teams, that would cause problems. And in fact, with Aprilia, that did cause problems, because Scott Redden was quite critical of the bike and got in trouble quite a lot with that. But I remember speaking to Massimo Rivola, who's Aprilia's CEO at Sepang this year, and I asked him about Aleix and how he can be quite passionate. And he said, you know, that's great, because we want a rider like that, because it makes everyone work better. And that's obviously worked, because as you said, the bike has taken a big step forward this year. Testing, although reliability was a bit iffy, lap times were good, race runs were good. It all seems to be coming together, and Aleix is a big, big part of that.
Yeah, I think that the reliability problems was, due to the timing. They went really close to the timing. They,
like a week or two before the Sepang test?
That's why they were really close. And that's why the other manufacturers allowed them to keep working with the engine until the end of this month. So, I mean, all the inputs go to the same direction, and it shows that the bike has grown quite, in a positive way in compared with the last one, that which was on Aleix eyes terrible. I can't wait to see this bike finishing races, because that's the most important part. This bike needs to finish races, because it doesn't make any sense to have a really competitive bike for only 10 laps.
Sure. It's definitely one of the bikes I was most excited to see at Sepang this year, because it was so new, but because it represented a really big step for Aprilia. Because, and I don't mean this not, well, I suppose there is, it can only be a harsh thing to say, but Aprilia has always been a bit of a letdown in MotoGP since they came back.
I thought you were going to say that you were excited because it was the first Andrea Iannone's bike.
Yeah, well, less said on that, the better. What I really liked about the bike actually was the front, the aerodynamics. I liked, that was the most interesting part. But yeah, Aprilia has always been a bit of a joke, really. They haven't made any real progress since 2015. Or the progress they should have made.
It was related to the commitment. I mean, which I never understood how Aprilia was committed to MotoGP on that level. If you commit to MotoGP, you need to give it all.
At the time when they came back, they were still in superbikes, still putting a lot into superbikes. I remember actually 2016, so British Grand Prix. It rained that weekend, by the way. I remember Alvaro Bautista, he said, because he was on his way out of Aprilia at that point, and he was asked in one of his debriefs, can Aprilia focus on the two, superbikes and MotoGP? And he said, look, you have to focus on one or the other if you're going to be successful in either. And if you look at the manufacturer, if you look at superbikes, as an example, if you look at Ducati, if you look at Yamaha, you look at Honda. Well, I take Honda out of the equation because they've only really come back properly this year. Yes, Ducati and Yamaha are race-winning bikes and they're good packages, but they're not at the same level as Kawasaki, because Kawasaki can commit to superbikes.
I would say that with Aprilia... First, they need to commit in one of those, and then once you have committed 100% to one of those, then let's see if you commit to the second one. But to me, they haven't been.
Not until last year, really, when Rivola came in from Ferrari. Very good signing. And he started to restructure things.
That's what we've seen with this year's bike. So it was not, I mean, yeah, even the, well, I'm not going to go back to the riders' shoes, but yeah, I mean, I would go back, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, yeah, just to finish up on Elise, we know he said he's spoken a lot about if this bike didn't make a step forward, he would look elsewhere. He wouldn't bother wasting his time with Aprilia anymore. So I think it says quite a lot about where he thinks the project is right now, that he will commit for 2 more years without having actually raced the bike. He's only had 2 tests on the bike, and the Qatar test was a little bit difficult for him. He found some things with the bike. It didn't work as well in colder conditions, but it shows just where that project is right now, if he's willing to commit, as I say, without having raced the bike. And so that can only be a positive sign, regardless of how the reliability is right now. Yeah,
well, I think that all these inputs put the project in a different level in compared with last year. I mean, we can see that Aprilia's project and LS position are not at the same point than last year at this stage, which is positive, because they gives all the team a new perspective. Say, listen, whoa, we are capable of doing this kind of step. So I think that's the best for the team, and that's the best for the championship as well. Because I remember coming back from, I think it was from Malaysia, and speaking with one of the Valentino Rossi's mechanics, that Australian one, coming back here, and he told me, well, one of the conclusions of the test was, well, he told me, apparently Aprilia is back on the game. So, which is really news.
Yeah, I remember when we were stood waiting for Vinales' debrief on the last day. He was speaking to a couple of journalists, and he was really excited about the step forward that Aprilia had made. You know, so even the riders the teams and riders have taken notice, and it's
the only thing I want to see
good for the championship.
Is that I want to confirm it on track.
Yeah, for sure.
When Jerez the championship starts, okay, because we have been years. Well. Yeah, let's see, Aprilia looks... but then, first race, second race, third race, and all goes back to the reality, the sad reality. So I just want to confirm that.
Yeah, and I think as well, it won't be until the second Jerez race that will confirm that, because we are going to have a test on the Wednesday. And we always see in Qatar when we have the test, it's always a very close weekend, so I think if they have a good first race at Jerez, it will be positive, but it will be more positive if they have a good race the following week at Jerez. So yeah, I am definitely interested to see that. Aprilia now just need to sign Danilo Petrucci, and they've got perfect team, as far as I'm concerned, for where the project is right now.
I think he has options. He has been offered by his manager, Alberto Bergani, to Aprilia, and let's see what decide, because I don't see... I think, yeah, Danilo and Aleix can be a really, really interesting couple there.
Yeah, two good riders. We know Danilo's a race winner. So you can't take that away from him. Good development riders, the pair of them. And unlikely to have fallens out like Aleix and his other teammates. So, you know, that's always a positive. But yeah, we'll wait and see on that front. But yeah, Aprilia is definitely... I think the team I'm looking most forward to seeing how they get on this year. It's certainly been the team that I've written the most features about this year, so I'm hoping that they do interesting things so I can write more features about them. I think on that positive note, we'll wrap up there. My thanks to Yuri for his company, as ever, and my thanks to the listeners, our thanks to the listeners for joining us. We hope you enjoyed that, and we hope you go and listen to our other podcasts on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast places. You can listen to Tank Slappers, listen to all the other Autosport podcasts as well. Do follow Autosport, motorsport.com over the next few weeks. Got lots of news, lots of features, we've been writing and as we gear up to go racing, so definitely a lot to keep you interested. And we will be back soon to discuss more MotoGP stuff. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye, and do please keep looking after yourselves.